Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. This is an Empowerment Hour. We're going to talk about the latest on health and healing. From Thomas Jefferson University, how stress hormones could undermine breast cancer therapy, and how the omega-3 fatty acids can help reduce the risk of colorectal cancer. And also, we're going to learn about ginkgo biloba and all the wonderful things it can do in healing, and how eating beets or drinking beet juice can help you if you're out climbing in the mountains, because it can help the high-altitude symptoms that frequently occur, and surprising medicinal uses of lavender oil, and much more. And then a commentary from Chris Hedges, how the brutalized become brutal, truth dig, and how neoliberals with chainsaws, rampant deforestation in Peru and the future of the Amazon, and how organic farmers suffer a 7,000% increase in lost revenue from GMO contamination in the last 3 years. Also, Hillary Clinton at Brookings, what'd she have to say? Well, I bet she wouldn't want her liberal base to know that. It's not good, but I'll share it with you. And also, I want to take a look at the West rightly condemns ISIS vandalism of ancient sites. So what's the problem? Robert Fisk of The Independent tells us. Do you remember about 4 years ago I told you that, yes, we were in the midst of a gas hydrofracking boom, but it was based upon a bubble, and it would collapse? Well, it's collapsing. From a major source today, from Echo Watch, quote, fracking boom goes bust as companies file for bankruptcy. And also, remember when I told you the United States is broke, totally broke, totally bankrupt, can never pay its bills? The latest, the Fed, quietly revises the U.S. debt from 330 to 350% of gross domestic product. Whoa. That means that we have a higher percentage of debt to income than Greece, Portugal, Ireland, Latvia, Lithuania, countries that we would consider financial basket cases, and yet we are almost double their debt to gross domestic product. So, interesting when we don't look at how deep we are in it. Also, should we really be calling it Columbus Day, a man who supposedly discovered America? I think not. So we'll share an audio clip about the real history of Christopher Columbus. Also, because Obama and his friends in corporate America have masterminded one of the most brilliant public relations campaign to convince us that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, all done in secret, is to our advantage, we'll share a comment from Elizabeth Warren on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and what 100 other law professors agree upon. And then we're going to also hear from two things involving politics. One is from Lawrence Lessig, who gives you some of the ideas about what it means to be a candidate and why aren't the Republicans and Democrats challenging these issues, and you'll hear these issues. And also, we'll play a clip from The West Wing when a character who's a newscaster is asked just to be honest and straightforward in summing up the problems that we face in the United States. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. We know that stress is a killer. In fact, behind most diseases in premature aging, and especially aging of the heart and our brain, is the inappropriate responses to stress. Our problem is we get caught up on how we feel about something that's happened to us, what someone did or did not do for us, whether or not our expectations were met or not. And this becomes our mini dramas throughout the day. And some people are very good at handling dramas in their lives. They just detach from it. And others become the drama, in which case all they can do is just chatter on about how they feel, more often than not feeling like victims. Here's the problem with all that. If you deal as the average person does with stress, it is killing you. Literally. It is also driving estrogen. That's a bad thing. According to Thomas Jefferson University, a major paper, here's what it has to say. Quote, recently researchers have discovered that the hormone progesterone, an ingredient in contraceptives and menopausal hormone replacement therapies, might stimulate the growth of breast cancer cells that are resistant to anti-estrogen therapy and chemotherapy. Now, research published in the journal Oncogene, a Nature magazine, shows that additional hormones, including stress hormones that are frequently used to treat the side effects of common chemotherapy, could make these effective drugs fail. All right. Now, keep in mind that 70-80% of all invasive breast cancers are driven by hormone estrogen. They are often called estrogen receptor positive diseases. And this group of women almost always take some form of hormone therapy. The bottom line is this. If you were to understand that stress promotes cancer, stress promotes heart disease, stress promotes destruction of your brain cells, leading to dementia and Alzheimer's, then maybe you might think about more appropriate ways of dealing with stress, such as mindfulness. Just taking a break from the argument, the dialogue, inner dialogue, and saying, what part of this am I not going to be able to change? Because even though we may change our response and reactions to something, we can't control how other people are going to respond. But we stay attached to their responses, even when their response is rage or anger. We become a part of someone else's drama, and that's never a good thing. So being calm, being relaxed, being able to detach, let it go, could be saving your life. Something else that could save your life is their omega-3 fatty acids. This is according to an article in Cancer Weekly and Oncology. They did some research at Massachusetts General Hospital on colon cancer, major killer, by the way. And the orthodox therapy is just, in my opinion, worthless. Chemotherapy has not been able to reverse this disease as it has been claimed. Just study the scientific literature. Or put it a different way, the next time any doctor for any procedure suggests that you should use it, say, I'll be happy to use it if you show me the evidence from independent research that it will give a quality life, is safe and effective. If they can't, then you're just going to be another victim. So you have the right to speak up on your behalf and say, if you're giving me what you consider science-based medicine, show me the science. Well, there's good science now behind the omega-3 fatty acids helping with the risk of colorectal cancer. In this particular study, there was a substantial reduction in colorectal cancer for those in this study that had the omega-3 fatty acids. So I'm suggesting 2 to 4,000 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids a day. You can get them when you eat flaxseed, avocados, walnuts, and you can get them when you have fish and fish oils. Those interested in learning how to enhance their longevity should take a look at a particular herb. It is the ginkgo biloba. Now, in Central Park in the fall, as the trees begin to change and the leaves begin to fall off, at a couple places in the park, there's a really rancid, almost vomit-like smell. And you'll notice out there, they're older, generally oriental women, more often than not Chinese, collecting that smell. Those are the ginkgo biloba bulbs, and they're extraordinarily powerful. Well, these have been used for thousands of years, known as the anti-aging herbs. element. And now we have some really good evidence that there is a thread of biological immortality woven into all things that are living. And anything that breathes or pulsates with life today contains within it germ-like genetic information that originated from a last universal common ancestor, and from which all living things, plants, bacteria, fungi, and animals included, descended. And while somatic cells within multicellular organisms perish, their germ-like stem cells are capable of infinite self-replication, which is the case of ginkgo biloba, and hence has been around for probably a quarter of a billion years, according to GreenMedInfo. Now, ginkgo biloba is the world's oldest living plant. It is known as a living fossil because it has no close living relatives. And in fact, it's the oldest ever recorded. So what is it about this ginkgo that makes it so unique? Well, one thing we found out, that those who survived Hiroshima in 1945 on August 6th were ones who understood the healing power of the ginkgo and used it after the blast. In fact, there were 6 ginkgo biloba trees were found standing and nothing else after the blast. Interesting, the same plant that survived exposure to a wide range of radioisotopes released by nuclear blast, including radioiodine-131, is capable of conferring radioprotective properties to humans exposed to at least one of the same elements. Graves' disease patients receiving radioiodine-131 therapy, which is known to cause chromosomal damage, have been found to benefit from receiving a ginkgo biloba supplement before treatment. And you can just look in the literature in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And ginkgo is not only has a reputation for longevity, with some plants living to over 1,000 years, but it appears willing to confer longevity to those who consume it to extend their own lives. Yes, there's a large body of preclinical and clinical research indicating that it is useful in age-associated cognitive decline. That means Alzheimer's, dementia, as well as visual disturbances like glaucoma. That's ginkgo biloba, but also can protect your mitochondria, the cells, by reducing oxidative stress and enhancing mitochondrial respiration, giving you more energy. And that's important. So let's look at the takeaway message for ginkgo. Ginkgo biloba, 100 milligrams 2-3 times a day, can help you if your body has been exposed to toxins, especially radiation. It can help prevent the brain from aging. It can help if you have allergies, if you have aluminum toxicity from vaccines, if you have ALS, arterial thickening, atherosclerosis, if you have ADD and ADHD, autism, it is beneficial. In fact, there's more than 100 medical applications for using ginkgo biloba. It's simply one of the greatest herbs in history. Now, new information shows that up to 15 million Americans are suffering from allergies. The question is, from the Natural Society, could these be due to GMOs, or at least some segment of them? Here's what we know. Quote, food allergies already affect more than 15 million Americans, while things like gluten sensitivity hits an additional 18 million, and it's affecting people to the tune of about $25 billion a year. And proteins in food are what most commonly cause allergic reactions. And when proteins are gene spliced, the body has a harder time digesting them. So when we're eating gene-edited proteins in today's diet that humans have never eaten before, the most of them have never even been tested for safety. And there's where your GMOs come in. And that's where a lot of people are having allergic reactions. So, if you're allergic, go 100% organic, no more GMOs. And also, a new study shows that, did they know back then in 1990, who? The Environmental Protection Agency. What? That electromagnetic fields, EMFs, were dangerous to health. The report shows, yes, probable human carcinogens decades ago, and they covered it up. That's right. They stopped their research, and I don't know why, but the likelihood is that they had pressure from outside sources. So the EPA has covered it up, and they should be held accountable, because think of all the people out there who have ended up using cell phones every day, all day, sleep with one beside their pillow at night, very dangerous, and then are in front of a computer, also dangerous. But the government knew it and covered it up. Now, I was asked yesterday, I had a chance to go to a couple museums. Wonderful if you haven't been to the Frick over on 70th and 5th Avenue. It's a beautiful architecture inside, great paintings. I particularly am fond of Frederick Church, Thomas Cole, some of the Turner, some of the great Hudson Valley and landscape painters of the realist painters of the 18th century, 19th century. And then walked up to the Guggenheim. I have no idea what they're trying to do with showing pieces of board or a box and saying it's modern art. I cannot appreciate modern art as others do, so I left the Guggenheim very quick after I saw nothing that impressed me, and then I walked up to Cooper, which is at 90th and 5th Avenue. If you haven't been there, some really interesting architecture and different design in there. But I also take time to get a juice, walk through the park, and someone stopped me while I was walking, and they had a question. The question was that they're a 44-year-old male and have found the last year that their libido is down, their energy is down, their muscle mass is shriveling, meaning they don't have the same muscle they used to have. It's more flab. And was there anything they could take if they didn't want to take a drug? And I said, yes. So boosting testosterone is easy. It's not that difficult, because when it begins to decline, and you'll lose about 1% to 2% decrease is measurable in blood levels every year once you hit your mid-40s. And then it just drops off the cliff by the time you hit 60. And then we're in full-blown andropause. And where historically men began to withdraw into themselves, were more emotionally detached, people thought it was emotional. It wasn't. It was biological. Their hormones were out of balance. And today we understand this. We understand that men who are over the age of 40, more often than not, have a reduction in free testosterone, and they need some form of replacement therapy. And testosterone replacement therapy often involves administering levels of far higher than normal physiological doses. And there are very serious side effects, including cancers, including prostate cancer. And also, when testosterone is replaced, a negative endocrine feedback loop is activated, sending a signal to your gonads to reduce its productive fluids even further, ultimately feeding the original deficiency and leading to shrinkage and atrophy of the testicles, called testicular atrophy. And also, when testosterone levels are suddenly increased through exogenous sources, there's often a concomitant increase in testosterone metabolites, and such as THT and estradiol, and that's not good. You end up with male pattern baldness. So what do you do? First, understand the culprits. The worst of the worst are the statin drugs. No drug is so thoroughly bad for your biology of testosterone than statins. I can't stand statins. There's at least, well, the statins claim that they're going to save your cardiovascular life. That's not true. There's over 200 different adverse health effects from statins. And bisphenol A, which is everywhere, it's an endocrine disruptor, mainly in plastics and canned foods and thermal printer receipts. All these things contain bisphenol A, and it will cause what is known as the feminizing estrogenic effects. So you want to go organic. You want to go organic and get rid of all the plasticized items in your house, the particle boards. Get rid of all that. Get down to what is natural. Also, the parabens. This is, again, a form of ubiquitous petrochemical. You can find it in body care products, shampoos, and that will disrupt your testosterone level. And glyphosate, You heard me right, glyphosate, the chemical in GMOs, and it is a testosterone-disrupting chemical, and it's virtually found everywhere where you have GMOs. So what can you do to reverse this? First and foremost, zinc. Zinc at about 20 milligrams a day is great for rebalancing testosterone levels, and especially free testosterone. And keep in mind, the male prostate happens to have one of the highest concentrations of zinc of any organ in the body, indicating how important it is to the male reproductive system. And you want that because zinc is also helping to detoxify against heavy metals like cadmium and associated DNA damage to the testicles and their ability to produce testosterone. And then vitamin C. Vitamin C is great for helping optimize testosterone. I'd suggest 6 times a day, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams. And then magnesium is associated with an anabolic hormones like testosterone and IGF-1 in the elderly. So make sure that you are taking your, I would say, 1,000 milligrams of magnesium citrate a day. Then saw, S-A-W, palmetto, P-E-L-P-A-L-M-E-T-T-O. It's one of the best testosterone natural ways of building up your testosterone level. And phosphatidylserine, S-E-R-I-N-E, critical for cell membrane component. And make sure you get that. And that's nice ways of helping yourself. That's the latest on health and healing. And one last thing, beet juice, a new study just came out showing that from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, that when people are out there climbing, they're struggling. You get altitude sickness caused by lower air pressures. But in the United States, we have people living in Arizona at the higher altitude, like Flagstaff. And you also have Denver, Mile High Stadium. You have almost all of the South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, New Mexico. You can get up to 7,000 feet there. So what you need is the key is called nitric, N-I-T-R-I-C, oxide. And that's one aspect of acclimating the blood vessels and their ability to deliver enough oxygen throughout the body. But normal blood vessel function depends upon the body's ability to naturally produce nitric oxide. And if you're living at the sea level down low, that's fine. You might not have a problem, but when you get up in those higher altitudes, you will. So you want your blood vessels to work better. Just make sure you're drinking beet juice. According to a study published in Nitric Oxide Biology and Chemistry, they found that the consumption of organic nitrite-rich beet juice restored reduced blood vessel function at high altitude. And that is important. Just think of all the people who are out there climbing like higher altitudes, even Mount Everest. If only they knew, they could do it easier and better and safer by consuming beet juice. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's now take a moment and hear the real history of Christopher Columbus.
Columbus Day, which we've celebrated in various parts of this country since the 18th century, even before it became a federal holiday back in 1937. And that's probably long enough, because when you find out the actual facts of what Christopher Columbus did when he got to America, you're going to see that it's one of the darkest chapters in America's history. Now, I've got a lot of these facts, Cenk, so feel free to just cut me off when you want to interject. But first of all, let's start with something light. Columbus initiated the transatlantic slave trade in early February 1494, first sending several dozen enslaved Tainos, so these are the native people of the island that he landed on, to Spain. Columbus described those he enslaved as well-made and of good intelligence. He ordered 1,600 of them rounded up and had 550 of the best males and females, according to one witness, Michel de Cunio, chained and sent as slaves to Spain. Of the rest who were left, that person writes, the announcement went around that whoever wanted them could take as many as he pleased, and this was done. And understand that significant numbers of even those early slave deliveries ended up dying en route.
Okay, so let me come in there with a couple amazing things here. First of all, Columbus also described the natives that he ran into when he first discovered this land. If he discovered it, how come they were already there? Anyway, he said they were, quote, so full of love and without greed. And you would think, like, oh, that's great. That's going to lead to good relations. He's like, no, idiots, he thought. They're so full of love without greed, it makes it super easy to enslave them, beat them, murder them, chop their hands off. Christopher Columbus, the original ISIS, we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
Okay? And so he looked at their love and compassion as a weakness that he could exploit.
Mm-hmm.
This is the man we celebrate, right? And he says, you take the slaves and do what we want with them. Here's what they did with them, according to the journals at the time. So this is history, and it's not somebody else said it about them. They said it themselves, right?
Most of the quotes you're going to see are taken from his personal journals.
In the journals of Columbus and his men, they bragged about how they would break the native women and that they would break their will to resist after rape after rape after rape. And then eventually they can get the women to do whatever they wanted because they had raped them so much.
Yeah.
Now, this is the man we celebrate.
Yeah.
Right? So now, look, when I was a kid, I was told Columbus discovered America. I knew that he hadn't discovered it because there were people there. Even as a kid, you could figure that out. But I got it. He discovered it from a European perspective. And at least, hey, the Europeans came here. We set up America and we celebrated it. And I celebrated it. But when I grew up, I put childish things aside. Okay. So now you want to take the blue pill and you want to go back to thinking Christopher Columbus is a lovely guy. Understand that you're making an active choice to deny facts, history, and say, I'd like to be ignorant. That's what I would like to do, right? That's a choice you're making, okay? But now that I know the facts, well, obviously I changed my mind on Christopher Columbus because no one ever told me what the real facts were. You find out the real facts and you go, you would have to be a monster to want to celebrate this guy.
Yeah, they leave it out of the elementary school textbooks. But yeah, so we have more barbarity, but the fundamental facts, as you pointed out, he did not discover America. First of all, other Europeans had already been to America at that point. And as you point out, well over 100 million native people had already been living there. They had discovered it first, actually. They did not think that the world was flat at that point. They had not thought that for over 1,000 years. So he was not brave in being willing to go over the edge of the world. And he did not go on a mission of exploration at all. It was a commercial enterprise and a religious enterprise to find gold and to find slaves and to convert them where possible. Now, the initial slave that we talked about proved to be unprofitable, but he later wrote, "Let us in the name of the Holy Trinity go on sending all the slaves that can be sold." So there you get both the religious and the commercial considerations in one sentence. When the slavery did not pay off, he turned to a tribute system, forcing every Taino of 14 or older to fill a hawk's bell with gold every 3 months. If successful, they were safe for another 3 months. If not, Columbus ordered that they be punished by having their hands chopped off, or they were chased down by attack dogs. As the Spanish priest Bartolomé de las Casas wrote, this tribute system was impossible and intolerable. They not only had their hands cut off, by the way, but they were forced to wear them around their neck on thongs. A little bit barbaric there.
Okay, now imagine if ISIS had cut off hands, which they do, right, from time to time. So does Saudi Arabia, by the way, one of our top allies. And then they made the kids, 15, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, wear the hands around their neck. And then they said, well, I'm only chopping it off because you didn't give me enough money, enough gold, enough bribes, right?
Yeah.
And then then they raped the women. They do this to the kids, to all the adults. And then they sick dogs on them, rip their by their flesh from their body, as we all watch. Now, we would rightfully call them monsters, the worst of the worst, right? Now, when Columbus does the same exact thing, we name a national holiday after him.
Yeah.
Again, if you didn't know, I didn't know either, right? It's okay. You're not a bad person. We were all told, hey, Columbus, hey, it was wonderful. Italian comes here, discovers America.
Explorer, brave.
You're brave, all that stuff. It's okay. You didn't know. But now you know.
Yeah.
But now you know. You can't celebrate that guy.
Yeah. Now, there's more that they have to know, unfortunately. This is another section from Christopher Columbus's personal journal. He wrote, 100 castellanos are as easily obtained for a woman as for a farm, and it is very general, and there are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 are now in demand. So they had set up some sort of system of pimps and sexual slavery in the New World. Eventually, he went back to Europe and then returned with more men after saying that he could conquer all of the natives because they had so little experience with war that he needed just 50 men and so that he could govern them. On his second trip to the New World, he brought cannons and attack dogs. If a native resisted slavery, he would cut off a nose or an ear. If slaves tried to escape, he had them burned alive. Other times, he sent attack dogs to hunt them down, and the dogs would tear off the arms and legs of the screaming natives while they were still alive. If the Spaniards ran short of meat to feed the dogs, Arawak babies were killed for dog food. Additionally, and this is one of the sources for the information, we referenced him earlier, one of Columbus's men, Bartolomeu de las Casas, was so mortified by Columbus's brutal atrocities against the native peoples that he quit working for Columbus and became a Catholic priest. In a single day, he was an eyewitness as the Spanish soldiers dismembered, beheaded, and raped 3,000 native people. Such inhumanities and barbarisms were committed in my sight as no age can parallel, he said. My eyes have seen these acts so foreign to human nature that now I tremble as I write. And the final toll for this barbarity, the slavery, the disease, the war, the killing, the torture, experts generally agree that before 1492, the population on the island of Hispaniola probably numbered above 3 million. Within 20 years of Spanish arrival, it was reduced to only 60,000. Within 50 years, not a single original native inhabitant could be found.
And that's your Columbus Day to celebrate with a different perspective. Now, this is something that I'm concerned about. We support one of the worst organizations in the world, the Saudi monarchy. It's about 5,500 individuals, and they are ruthless. They are terrorists. They're killers. But there are our killers. This is from Robert Fisk from The Independent. Explosive pulverized historical sites. In the Middle East, bulldozers erase ancient tombs and shrines. Historic forts are torn down and Ottoman facades destroyed. The home of the favorite wife of the most revered man in the entire religion of Islam is even turned into a block of toilets. How can the world prevent this wicked desecration and extinction of a heritage that belongs to all mankind? I am, of course, referring to those idiosyncratic Wahhabists, Salafist, Muslim, head choppers, the Saudis. And the world will do nothing, absolutely nothing. It will screech and rage and curse, not at all, but because it's Wahhabi. But if it were ISIS, yes, it would. But no other protest against Saudi Arabia's willful destruction of ancient graves, homes, shrines, and buildings. Of Islam's Prophet Muhammad and his closest relatives and companions. Naturally, we could conclude that Roman remains are more valuable than the antiquities of Islam, but this would be about as racist a reaction as suggesting that the Roman Empire was more important than the Islamic Empire. No, the real reason we ignore the vandalizing of so many Muslim sites is that we cannot, will not, must not criticize the Saudis, whose grotesque wealth silences all of us to such obscene lengths that our prime minister flies our flags at half-mast when its autocratic ruler dies. No suggestion must be made, not even the softest whisper must be uttered that might connect our Saudi friends with the apocalyptic cult called ISIS, which follows the absolutist determination of Wahhabi Sunni faith adopted 270 years ago by the ancestors of the present Saudi monarchy. In the past few days, we have rightly bewailed the pulverization of the magnificent Arch of Triumph of Palmyra, 1,800 years old, probably erected to commemorate the Emperor Aurelius's victory over Queen Zenobia, who was later dragged ISIS-style through the streets of Rome, and the loss of the entrance to the magnificent and roofless Roman colonnade, which we must all fear will also be leveled by the time the Syrian army, with its Russian air cover, recaptures the city. The reduction of Palmyra to rubble is a war crime, according to the UN. But when the country, with hundreds, perhaps thousands of ISIS supporters and donors, wipes out the Islamic history of Arabia, including 90% of Mecca's millennium-old sites, we pay as much attention to this mass vandalization as we do to the damage of a nativity window in a church. Take a glance at what has come to pass in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. A library has been built over the dwelling where the Prophet Muhammad was born in Mecca in AD 570. Even this may now be replaced by skyscrapers, and the fine mosque dating from the same period has been bulldozed. Muhammad's first wife lived in a Mecca house which has been turned into toilets. The Mecca Hilton Hotel was erected over the house of Abu Bakr, and Muhammad's father-in-law, his closest companion, future caliph. Hundreds of old Ottoman houses have been destroyed in Saudi Arabia, and the famous seven mosques built by Muhammad's daughter and four companions were demolished 9 years ago. And after the Lebanese, who are Christian, Professor Salabi published a book in 1985, suggesting that many Saudi villages bore biblical Jewish place names, the bulldozers arrived to erase all of them. This grotesque destruction of Muslim history is directly linked to ISIS's own purge of the past by the Wahhabi faith, which the Saudis adopted from the teachings of the 18th century Muhammad, Abdul Wahhab, who preached that Islam should return to the purity of its earliest principles. From these ideas came the notion that almost any historical monument represents an excuse of idolatry, a precept adopted with ferocious enthusiasm by the Saudi tribes. And so it is. It's not that Saudi Arabia's self-destruction of history is unknown. The Independent was one of the first Western newspapers to give it publicity in pre-ISIS days. Nor may the saints preserve us from such folly and the kingdom's lawyers. It's just we won't talk about it. And they are correct. By the way, with the crucifixions and the beheadings almost weekly in Saudi Arabia, no mention, no criticism. Separately, here's good news. This is from EchoWatch. Quote, U.S. shale production is in deep, deep trouble as the fracking boom burst in the face of low oil prices. The September report from the oil cartel OPEC showed the writing on the wall. Quote, crude oil prices have declined by more than 50% since last year, and fracking companies in places like North Dakota, West Texas, parts of Oklahoma, and Kansas have all taken a big hit. Many are filing for bankruptcy protection or going out of business. There were a large number of new entrants into the fracking business during the last 4 to 5 years. There are a very small number now, and that's it. They're going out of business. So we could see the end of gas hydrofracking as long as the price of oil and gas stay down in probably the next 2 years. Now, I'd like to share a piece from you. This is about a reporter getting angry before he goes on the news, when he's being told in his headset what to say. Probably a parody, but looked fun. I thought you'd like to hear it. Listen in.
Being at least a UK military intervention seems unlikely.
Why are we doing this outside? Well, because it's cold and it's starting to rain and we can easily do it from a studio. I'm just wondering what... Yeah, well, that's very easy for you to say in your ivory tower. I'm just wondering... Really? Really? Okay, do you hear what he just said? He just said, why don't you, for once in your life, just do the f***ing news? All right, no. Here is f***ing news. Ex-commercial TV PR man, old Etonian and occasional pigster David Cameron would like to bomb Syria. Unfortunately, Russia's got there first, and America's been doing it for ages. He wants to bomb Syria to stop the flow of refugees fleeing all the bombs. He's also hoping it will stop the increased influence of Islamic extremism. Bombing Syria will, of course, destroy the one remaining multicultural society in the region, leaving it open to the increased influence of Islamic extremism. To bomb Syria, therefore, is clearly mental. In other news... I'm doing the news. In other news, Muslims are bad, China's bad, but not as bad as it used to be, and Russia is always bad. Nuclear weapons are good, and to suggest not using nuclear weapons is bad. On to the economy. Debt is good. Corrupt banks are bad, but not bad enough for us to do anything about them, and poverty in the UK is a figment of your imagination. On to housing. Jeremy Corbyn's plans to build affordable housing and create social housing for the poorest people in our society is a terrible idea. That's according to multi-millionaire, property magnate and all-round pot Sir Alan Sugar. Environmental news, there's nothing to worry about, so please carry on consuming at your usual rate. And finally tonight, entertainment. Matt Damon's intelligent and articulate observations about sexuality in Hollywood means that he is definitely a homophobic tat. My name is Jonathan Pye, and that was the King News.
I'd like to hear someone do the news like that. Now, there was a scene from the West Wing where it was a college auditorium, and someone was asking about American exceptionalism, and they were asking different people, and here's how one of them responded.
My name is Jenny. I'm a sophomore, and this is for all three of you. Can you say in one sentence or less what... you know what I mean. Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well,
the New York Jets.
No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it. Diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
You don't look satisfied.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America...
Not the greatest country in the world, Professor. That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how can they lose so damn always?
Hey!
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one.
Well, once again, we don't have people willing to tell the truth like that today, except on a television program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to open up our lines for talkback in a moment. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But I have a commentary to share with you before then, and some specifics on how much debt we have and why I believe that we're going to be bankrupt and start to see parts of our economy implode with disastrous results if people don't start to liquefy some of those assets, sell some, and get your money in. My belief in gold and silver, and hide it. Don't put it in banks. But I'll get to that in a few moments. Want to take one moment here. First of all, thank you all for showing up to support WBAI on Friday evening. It was a wonderful evening. We had so many positive people who came because they wanted to know the truth about what was this thing they were eating. They had only recognized a piece of fried chicken as a chicken wing or a chicken breast. They never saw the chicken. A hamburger was just a patty. They never saw the cow or calf or veal or pig. The movie wasn't made to make people feel good about themselves. It was made to be a voice for those who have no voice, the creatures that we think we need to eat because we need to be healthy. Nothing could be further than the truth. We make ourselves unhealthy on all levels by consuming this. And so people got the message. And that's a good thing. I'm sorry that WBAI did not have all your premiums as they had promised. The people came through this network did get theirs because we like to honor our audience as we always do. If you've noticed, I'm not on BAI today, nor probably will be for the rest of this campaign they're having. There was no discussion. There was no professionalism. There was no sense of explaining why we would be preempted, probably because I'm having to guess now. I told the audience I could not in good conscience raise money for the station until those premiums from the past that they had ordered not arrive, actually arrive. At the end of the day, you lose your station when you lose your audience's confidence and faith. Long ago, we have lost that. To think that you can pay other bills and not pay for those that are obligated to the premiums is to be not understanding your audience. But if you've never had to pay a consequence to the mistakes you've made, then why change? For those of us who live in the real world, where of cause and effect, then the first thing you want to do if you have a radio station is honor the listener at the highest level you can in its programming, in management, and most importantly, be there for what the audience needs and wants to hear. And that's what we do. So when this fund drive is over, I hope then our program will be returned to where it should be, but I can't promise that. Because with this management, there is never a full awareness of what the motives of any choice is. Now, it gives me a chance then to spend a little time with people on the air today. I want to say that we haven't done this in a long time, but we're going to have a little quick fundraiser, and this stuff will go out today. Because we have the premiums in-house, we have a Supremacy. This is the all-natural amla extract and acer oil extract Supremacy. It's vegan, it's GMO-free, and it's gluten-free. You're getting the highest quality, 2,100 milligrams per quarter teaspoon of the ascorbyl palmitate, calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, ascorbic acid, and in good amounts. And it's all here. Plus, you're getting the acerola extract, pineapple juice, citrus bioflavonoids, and AMLA extract. This is it. I'm holding it in my hand. If you take a look there, that's your Supremacy. I travel everywhere with my Supremacy because I believe in taking it throughout the day. So you're getting a special deal. Here's the deal, and this is a great deal. It's normally $86.99. That lasts, well, it could easily last you a couple months. It is going to be on sale for $56.99, plus you're going to get today a free copy of my newest film that's not even out yet, Saving the Planet, One Bite at a Time. So that's $40 value, free, plus you're saving a lot on this, so you're getting... you're saving $70 savings today for your Supremacy extra. Call this number to get it, and we'll ship it right out to you. Let me just see what it is here. I don't have that number. I'll get that number for you in a moment. The 877 number. Let me see that we have that here. And this is for the Supremacy Extra. Supremacy Extra. And then we're going to take your calls. And we're going to... It's 877-627-5065. That's 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the Supremacy Extra. Now, a few thoughts that I think are important. I want to share something from Chris Hedges. Here's what he says. Quote, "The horrific pictures of the beheading of American reporter James Foley, the images of execution of alleged collaborators in Gaza, and the bullet-ridden bodies left behind in Iraq by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant are the end of a story, not the beginning. They are the result of years, at times decades, of random violence, brutal repression, and collective humiliation the United States has inflicted on others. Our terror is delivered to the wretched of the earth with industrial weapons. It is to us invisible. We do not stand over the decapitated and eviscerated bodies left behind on cities and village streets by our missiles, drones, and jet fighters. We do not listen to the wails and shrieks of parents embracing the shattered bodies of their children. We do not see the survivors of air attacks bury their mothers, fathers, brothers, and sisters. We do not become conscious of the long night of collective humiliation, repression, and powerlessness that characterizes existence in Israel's occupied territories, Iraq and Afghanistan. We do not see the boiling anger that war and injustice turn into a cauldron of hate over time. We are not aware of the very natural lust for revenge against those who carry out or symbolize this repression. We see only the final terror, the shocking moment when the rage erupts into a fury and the murder of innocence. And willfully ignorant, we do not understand our own complicity. We self-righteously condemn the killers as subhuman savages who deserve more of the violence that created them. This is a recipe for endless terror." And that's from Chris Hedges. Now we're going to go to our phones and see what's on your mind. Let's say hello to Yasmin from Japan. Hi, Yasmin.
Hello.
Hi, your turn.
This is Yasu Yoshi from Tokyo. And I have three quick questions, two of which is regarding the UN. Japan has decided, or not has, but considering not funding UNESCO. But you also have a strong negative attitude towards the UN in general, but I'm wondering what your opinion is about UNICEF as well. And the third point is something that always gets everybody to hate me immediately, which is regarding the Nanking Massacre. Now, all the wonderful skeptical minds in the West seem to immediately go into hatred towards Japan, but, and I used to be that way myself, but when I went down to going into investigating what the detail is back then, that, well, it, at least you could also immediately access an English long document called Analyzing the Photographic Evidence of the Nanjing Massacre by Higashi Nakano Shudo. And if I have...
Let me address your two issues. I am not opposed to the UN per se. I am opposed to the politicalization of the UN and its different departments and what it has sanctioned that represents crimes against humanity. I am opposed, for example, to the UN not honoring the debt that they owe to the human life lost, over 10,000 people minimally, to cholera that was done to the people of Haiti, where the troops of the UN troops caused that. And it was proven as such, but they never took a second to try to say they're sorry and then try to give help to those people whose families were affected, who lost people because of that. Also, they've been on the wrong side repeatedly of doing things such as they sanctioned behind the scenes, and we have this as a matter of record from the general who oversaw the UN mission in Rwanda, when he wanted to intervene and stop the slaughter by going to a warehouse that had all the weapons and confiscate them, he was told to stand down. When he wanted to go into that church, a Catholic church that had been used as a sanctuary for over 2,000 Tutsis, where the Hutu were outside banging machetes against their legs, he was told to stand down. So they had to watch 2,000 plus Tutsis be slaughtered, and they couldn't lift a finger. When they had an opportunity to rescue some Belgian troopers who were being held captive, they were told to stand down, hence all the Belgians were killed. You have one of the most corrupt organizations in history in the UN, and yet you look at what it could do, is supposed to do, versus what it does, and that's where the concern comes in. As to the rape of Nanking, back in the 1900s, all you had to do, quite simply, 1937, is you had to simply come forward, not based upon photographic evidence, based upon all of the living witnesses who survived and who told their stories, and the missionaries who were there from other countries who told the stories. So there were thousands and thousands of living witnesses to this horror. And simply apologize, more importantly than apologizing, is try to explain what was it within the psyche of the Japanese people that allowed them to invade other countries. Remember, they also did it in Burma as well, and in China, create genocide, bomb the United States at Pearl Harbor, and at no point until it was over and they were facing complete annihilation did they finally say, we're surrendering. But there's a difference between surrendering and understand why you were in the mess to begin with. Why did you engage in such a psychopathic mess? Was this from that little the emperor, you know, a grossly flawed human being, or Hirohito, all the others who commanded this? Now, I could say the same thing about our mission in Vietnam, how many people we killed in Vietnam, and our mission in Iraq and Afghanistan. Saying you're sorry individually or collectively has no power unless you understand its lessons so you don't repeat it. Now you're remilitarizing Japan. And take a look since the end of World War II till now how women have been treated in Japan when it comes to sharing power, being respected, or being liberated so that they can be an important part of the society. Take a look at the corruption, the inherent corruption in the institutionalization of power in Japan that protects TEPCO and protects those who are responsible for the mess of Fukushima and covering up the lies afterwards, as they do to this day. Take a look at your banking system that is totally bankrupt. Your whole nation is bankrupt. And you went from the second most powerful economic engine in the world, most of that on debt, till today you have one of the highest debt to gross domestic products in the world. So you have a continuation of the same type of misogynist, racist, and power-hungry group of individuals, the elite, and the power they've had over controlling the message they give to the masses. And we have the same thing in our own country. So you're not unique. So if you stand up and speak out on any issue that is going to go against the common knowledge or common accepted norms, it's understandable where you might get some blowback. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much, Yasin from Tokyo. I'm out of time today. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Find a wheel and it goes round, round, round as it skims along.